I want to reread the scripture that I read last week. But this one, I don't think it's going to be on the screen. At least, Ken, I don't want it on the screen. Because I'm going to read it from the JFN version. Y'all own the JFN version? That's the Joel F. Noggle version. But I wrote it up so that, it goes like this. Now the tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to hear Jesus, while the Pharisees and the teachers of the law listened at a distance and glowered. There was a rich man, Jesus said, who had someone managing his assets. But this manager was accused of squandering that which he was supposed to be managing. So the rich man said, clear out your office and turn in all your ledgers. You're fired. What to do? The now disgraced manager wasn't sure how he'd survive. He really didn't want to work. But he was too proud to go on public assistance. Then all at once it hit him. Summoning his master's debtors one by one, he adjusted their accounts with steep and generous discounts to gain their favor. Perhaps, he thought, by doing this, some of them would allow him to move in and help him keep the lifestyle to which he was accustomed. When the master heard of his manager's deception, instead of being angry, he actually commended him for his quick and shrewd thinking. And Jesus said, You see how the children of this world are wiser in their dealings with their own kind than the children of the light? That's you and that's me. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with the unrighteous capital of this world, so that when it fails, your friends will receive you in eternal homes. I'm going to say that again, and I'm going to say it again. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with this unrighteous capital of the world, so that when it fails, your friends will receive you. Now, we started looking at this story last week, and I told you that it's one of the most controversial and contested of Jesus' stories, and it's because of that sentence that I reread, this time from the New Revised Standard Version. Make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth. Jesus said that? So that when it is gone, they may welcome you in eternal homes. I'm going to talk about that today. But before I do, because I know that there are people here who weren't here last week, let's just do a real quick recap. I went over and I reread last week's sermon and kind of just restudied it. And I came up with the fact that there were at least three takeaways that I wanted us to get out of that sermon. And the first takeaway was, number one, everything belongs to the Father. Everything belongs to the Master. All right, you and I don't own a thing. It all belongs to God. James 1:17 says, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights. You and I just have the privilege of managing what God owns. But we also have the privilege of using it for our own good and for his glory. So that's the first takeaway. The second takeaway, this text, this parable, has a lot of questions. It raises a lot of questions. And one of the questions we talked about last week is, do I want to be shrewd or do I want to be faithful? Okay? And I said shrewdness and faithfulness are opposites of each other. They're diametrically opposed. Okay? Shrewdness implies cleverness. Faithfulness implies obedience. Shrewdness lives to serve itself. Faithfulness lives to serve the master. The world is into shrewdness and elevates it, whereas the world is not particularly comfortable with obedience and sacrifice, which are the hallmarks of faithfulness. So that's the second thing we got out of that, or I got out of it. The third thing is this. You and I have to decide which way it's going to be for our lives and which master we're going to serve. The manager in Jesus' story looked out for number one. He served himself. And because he served himself, he compromised his character. He was unscrupulous and dishonest in the beginning. He was unscrupulous and dishonest in the end. He compromised his character. And another question that this story raises is, what kind of character do you have and how do you want to be known? Another way Tony Campolo says it is, when you die I love this. And they take you to the cemetery and drop you in a hole and come back to church and eat potato salad. How do you want to be remembered? And what do you want them to say about you? Talking about your character. Now, these are the things we talked about last week, okay? And then I asked you this question to think about, take home with you. Because God owns it all, and you and I are just put here on earth to manage that which God owns, this is what I asked you. What are you doing with the life that God has loaned to you? What are you doing with it? One of you actually put that as a Facebook post last week because I saw it, okay? Matthew 25 has a parable that's going to be familiar to 75 to 80% of us, and it kind of deals with the same subject. Here you've got another rich man in Jesus' story, Matthew 25, only this time he gives three people management over his resources. He points three people to manage his resources while he goes away on a trip. When the master returns and he asks for an account of what they have done with what he has given them, two of them, he finds, has invested his resources and doubled them. And the master says to the servants, are you ready? Well done, good and... There's the word. Well done, good and faithful servants. Because you have been faithful in a few things, I'll put you in charge of many things. Come share your master's happiness, okay? But the one guy, the one manager, took what the master had resourced him and buried it in a hole for safekeeping. Buried it. He did nothing with it. And the master said of him, you wicked servant, you didn't get it. And you're not going to. Not ever. What are you doing with what the master has loaned to you? We don't like to think about it, but Romans 14:12 says, each of us will give an accounting of himself, herself to God. One of these days, after they come back to church and eat potato salad, I'm going to stand before the Lord and I'm going to give an accounting of my life. Romans 14:12 says, the day is coming when you will give an account of what you have done to God. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10 says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done. Okay? There's going to be a day of accounting. What are you doing? What have you done with what God has loaned you? In the language of the kingdom of God, not much doesn't carry any weight. It just doesn't carry any weight. Now, I'm going to say something here, and I do not want you to be offended. I don't want you to be offended because I promise you, I have sown this seed, I have shared this quote with every church I have pastored, and I would share it with any church in town if they asked me to guest preach. It's a quote from John Maxwell that I heard years ago. I'm not talking about you and I'm not talking about me, but I might be. John Maxwell said this, it'll be a sad day for the church that has a lot of money in the bank when Jesus comes back. I want you to think about Matthew 25 and the man who had the third talent and did nothing with it. It'll be a sad day for the church that has a lot of money in the bank when Jesus comes back. You see, here's what I think. The family of God, that's you and that's me, and that's the Presbyterian Church in the square, that's all of us who are the body of Christ. The family of God tends to sit on God's resources or put them in an account where they can't be touched. And consequently, we cannot do the things that we should be doing that are of kingdom value. It is like we believe that somehow the master's provision is going to stop and go stale. It's almost like we believe that we will become impoverished or that God will become impoverished if we invest too generously. It is like we forget all about what God promised the prophet Malachi when God said in Malachi 4, test me in your generosity. Go ahead and put me to the test and see if I won't open the floodgate of heaven so that you will be blessed and resourced beyond that which you can handle. You know, the hue and cry of Christians, at least the Christians that I'm around, and I've said it myself, is God will provide. I know God will provide. It's never a question. Listen, it's never a question that God will provide. God will always resource us one way or the other. The question is, will you and I provide, and will we use what God has provided? Will you and I provide, and will we use what God has provided? Or will we let it sit and grow dust and get moth-eaten and rust away? The master in today's parable commended the unscrupulous manager because he knew how to use the master's resources. He knew how to use his master's resources to accomplish a goal. What was his goal? To win friends and influence people so he had some place to stay in his old age. And he knew how to get it from his master. Okay? Dishonestly, but he got it. And Jesus said, and what he would say to us if you would listen, is, do you see how the unbelieving people of this world, listen, know how to use the world's treasure to get what they want? Whereas the righteous people, my people, let their dreams and visions die through poor mouthing and act like they don't know how to accomplish anything. I want to tell you a story. Years ago, I told the first service, it was when my children were little. That doesn't mean that much to you, but my oldest is 38, and so it was when my kids were small. We had a friend, a teenager, and she had a goal. She had a dream. And her dream for herself was she wanted to be a missionary for the summer in a third world country. And she intended to go with YWAM. YWAM is Youth with a Mission. Okay, it's an interdenominational evangelical ministry that is in 181 countries and has 15,000 volunteers. And she had read about YWAM, and she found a country that she wanted to go see, and to do this country, to pay for her airfare and to pay for her shots and to pay for her provisions, she needed to raise about $4,000. And by the time she came to us, she was still over $1,000 short. And had a mere days to raise it and didn't know where she was going to get it. And Kathy and I gave her $100 because that's what we had at our disposal at the time. But still, that was nothing. I mean, really. And I thought, how is this girl going to raise $1,000 in a week's time to get herself to Youth with a Mission? And then it hit me. And I did something really stupid, and that is I promised her, well, maybe it was shrewd, I promised her I'd get her the money. Now, I don't know exactly at that time how I was going to get her the money, but I thought there's one thing I can do. And here's what I did. I went to my wealthiest friend. I went to the wealthiest guy that I knew. He wasn't a good friend. He was an acquaintance and a father of a child that went to school with my daughter. Okay? He was an entrepreneur, owned some businesses in town. I'm not going to tell you what town, but he owned some businesses. He was a churchgoer, but he wasn't necessarily mission-minded. And I thought, I'm going to go to him and I'm going to ask him for the money. So I went into his store that he owned at that time. And I talked to the manager in the front and I said, is Tony here? Yeah, Tony's here. He's in the back room. I said, I want to talk to him. And he came out and he sat down and I sat down and I said, Tony, I'm going to ask you for a very big favor this afternoon. And he said, what do you need? And I started to tell him about this girl, her name was Jennifer, and how she wanted to go on this trip. And I didn't get very far at all. I didn't tell him half of what I've already told you. And he cut right to the chase. And he looked at me and he said, Joel, how much are you going to ask me for? And I said, $1,000. And he wrote me out a check without asking any other questions. Now, was I lucky? James 4, the brother of Jesus, verse 2 says, brothers and sisters, you don't have because you don't ask. You don't have because you don't ask. In this case, I knew where the resources were. I didn't know how I was going to get them. I didn't know if I'd have to put the old squeeze play on him. I didn't know if I had to use my mother's technique and pour on the guilt. But I knew where the resources were. And I knew who to ask. So many times Christians, that's you, get stymied and do nothing, assuming no is the answer when it's a simple matter of going to the master and asking what you need because he will supply your need. Philippians 4:19 says, "My God will supply all you need according to his glorious riches." Our God will supply our needs, brothers and sisters. All we have to do is ask. And then my study Bible about this parable said, you see, the children of light, and that's you. That's what Jesus called us in the parable, the children of the world and the children of light. He said, the children of light need to utilize the resources God has placed at our disposal in order to accomplish our goals. The goals set for us by the Master. We need to utilize the resources. We need to utilize what's in the world. We need to utilize the unrighteous mammon, and we need to utilize what's in the church, and we need to utilize what God has given us. Just as a bunny trail, you're going to see a video in about 5 minutes, and it has a wonderful song on it. I sang the song instead of the video up there. I can't do it twice. I shoot my voice with two sermons and two songs. I just can't do it twice. This morning I thought, I don't know if I can do this. And I thought, Joel, you're preaching about being resourced by God. Ask him to help you and sing it. You know? And so we need to ask that we need to use what is available to us and what God has resourced with us to accomplish our goals. Jesus had a goal. And Jesus knew God would resource that goal. And his goal is in John 6, what is it, 39, "I have not lost one of these that you gave me." That was his goal. That was his mission. That was his passion. "I will not lose one of these that you have given me." Whereas the Pharisees treated their most precious resource the Master had given them carelessly. You know what it was? The people. Jesus was heavily invested in the eternal destination of the people around him. He made it his business to make the human soul his business, whereas the Pharisees were not invested in the people around them and didn't see their souls as something of intrinsic value. Now, while you're pondering that, I'm almost done. Jesus gave us two commandments. In the entire New Testament, there's two commandments that he really brought up front and personal. Number one, love one another. And you all remember my sermon, "Love the People." And the second is, go and make disciples. Go and make disciples. Now, I've told you faithfulness to the God is obedience. And obedience is friendship with Christ. How do I know that? As Jesus said, "You're my friend if you do what I say." What did Jesus tell me to do? He told me to love one another, and he told me to go and make disciples. If I listen to what he says, I'm a friend of Christ, which brings me to this next thing, which is the this is what this whole thing is about in a nutshell. You and I are to use what God has resourced us and ask if necessary, so that we can, through our resources, love people and bring others to Jesus Christ. Now, some of you come from a church tradition. You say, "Well, I know what that is, Joel. That's evangelism." You know what evangelism means, literally translated? Making friends for Christ. That's what it means. You are my friends if you do what I command. Okay? I have a very good friend. I told about this, and then we'll do this video. I have a very good friend who, as a Christian, has never lost sight of the fact that we are called to love one another. Anytime my friend Dave teaches a Sunday school class, and anytime he preaches a sermon, it's always about loving one another. Always. He preached his own wife's funeral this summer, and it was about loving one another. David has a one-string guitar, and that's where he plays it, and he plays it well. He has never lost sight of the fact that the reason God created him and resourced him was to love other people, and number two, to lead other people to Jesus, to show them Jesus, to make disciples. He has never forgotten that. Okay? It's not that Dave marches around with a Bible in his hands and has a captive audience like I do right now and pounds them with a sermon like I'm doing right now. David was an educator. He was a middle school principal. But in the world of education, he saw it his ministry with his staff and with his students to be Jesus and to be light. I asked you, what are you doing with what God has resourced you? He's put you on loan. And this is how David chose to live it. On Friday, I was privileged to talk to one of the people he influenced. A guy that lives in State College, used to be in his building, came in as a brand new teacher years ago when David was his principal. And I happened to call Dave, and Dave was at his house. And I told Dave I was going to preach about him today. And I said, I'm going to talk about your influence. And the guy said, oh, I want to talk about that. So we talked. And the guy I spoke to in State College said that Dave has been a light over the years for him. And he told me it was, now listen, it was the little things that David did. It was not big things. It was his simple witness of being who he is and his words that showed this guy how to live and to live for God. Now I'm quoting him. Dave was a role model in classroom leadership. He said, I watched him treat the children. I watched how he treated children, and I wanted to emulate that. And then he said, I was a single guy at the time, and Dave and Barb took me into their home and gave me the privilege of watching a young family interact. And in that interaction, he said, Dave showed me how to be a husband. He showed me what a godly father looks like. He showed me how to be a man of integrity. He showed me how to be a man of honesty. There is two words for character. And he showed me how to be frank. And David is frank. He tells it like he sees it. And his frankness was refreshing. And the guy said, he showed me what a Christian does. And he ended it with this. You know, Joel, you never know what influence you have just through your friendship. And Jesus said, use the resources of this world and gain friends. Evangelism. And when it's all gone, and I've never seen anybody take a U-Haul to the cemetery. When it's all gone, you will have people welcome you in eternal homes. Brothers and sisters, please make friends for yourself through Christ. Use what God's been loaned to you. And let me tell you this, and this is my last sentence. When you close your eyes and they've eaten potato salad, you have no idea who you're going to see in the kingdom because of what you invested here on earth, and you have no idea who's going to welcome you when you get there. Ray Bolts wrote this song back in the 80s, and it's a beautiful song, and it really speaks to, I think, to the parable of the manager, and so let's give it a whirl.
Dreamed I went to heaven, and you were there with me. We walked upon the streets of gold, beside the crystal sea. I heard these angels singing, and someone called your name. You turned and saw this young man, and he was smiling as he came. And he said, friend, you may not know me now. And he said, but wait. You used to teach my Sunday school when I was only 8. Every week you would say a prayer before the class would start. One day when you said that prayer, I asked Jesus in my heart. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am a life that was changed. I am so glad you gave. Then another man stood before you. He said, remember the time a missionary came to your church. His pictures made you cry. You didn't have much money, but you gave it anyway. Jesus took the gift you gave, and that's why I'm in heaven today. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am a light that was changed. One by one they came, far as your eyes could see. Each life somehow touched by your generosity. Little things that you had done, sacrifices you made, they were unnoticed on this earth. And I know up in heaven, you're not supposed to cry. But I'm almost sure there were tears in your eyes as Jesus took your hand and you stood before the Lord. He said, my child, look around. Great is your reward. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am a life that was changed.
Lord, consecrate our lives for giving. And prepare our hearts for trusting. Set our minds on kingdom things. And our souls on treasures in heaven. Give us the courage to ask and find and receive and be opened up. And help us to live each and every moment well with what you have loaned to us. And if we haven't done that, it's not too late.